On today's show, we welcome Marcus Brown, an awesome runner from London in Great Britain. Welcome to the show, Marcus.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Mate, I am going so well, and I've been drawing some inspiration from your speedy feet running all over the place. But for people who have not yet come across you, could you tell us a bit about your endurance life?
So it's been a bit random, to be honest. I didn't start as a, like, you know, as a very good at endurance sports. In fact, that's something I try to avoid, and My friend was doing like a half marathons at the time at my university, and he got me to do it for a bet. I ended up doing a 10K, and I ended up liking it and just sort of started from there, really. But I did a lot of races badly. So it's been a journey of learning what doesn't work, also what does work.
Yeah, I find it very intriguing to think, like, the amount of times that I've come across people that have ended up being quite prolific runners, or, you know, really running has become the core of their life, and it started with bets. Thank goodness for these people that are challenging you. Like, you wonder, like, what prompts them to, are they just betting everyone? Like, you know, Mo Farah, like, turns out to go back, someone's just like, hey Mo, Sir Mo, I don't know if they called him Sir Mo back then, probably not. I bet you $100 here. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just love this. Yeah. So since then, you've from that 10K, you certainly have done a lot of races. So what's it been like since then?
So I tried to build my confidence up by doing 10Ks and half marathons. I did my first marathon in Abingdon around 2008. And I think that was about 4:15 around that sort of time. And I was just really winging it, to be honest. And I did a lot of marathons badly for a long time until I met my coach. Actually, there was a big period in between, I think after Berlin in 2010, where I actually had a massive break of running. So I didn't run for about 4 or 5 years because I wasn't hitting my goals and I really wasn't enjoying it. And I was just kind of focusing on the wrong things. So I needed some time away from it, and then I came back to it with kind of renewed energy. But it's definitely with the help of my coach, John Starlett, and he's really helped me kind of kick on, really.
So beforehand, did you have a coach, or just you were just self-coached?
No, I was winging it. You buy, like, I bought lots of different books, and whilst books are good, you know, when you're looking at a plan, you sometimes read it as gospel. Whereas you don't realize sometimes, depending how you're feeling and how long it takes the body to adapt, that it might not be the right plan for you, or wasn't the right plan for me, and I was just getting injured and I wasn't enjoying it and just didn't have the consistency in my running. I would say I'd run for like 16 weeks and then I would not run for a while and start again and then wonder why I'd be getting the same results. So, I mean, I definitely did everything wrong at the beginning. So it was just a massive learning process.
Yeah, that's really intriguing, hey, because I wonder, you know, the idea of getting a coach seems like, oh, well, if I'm going to be elite, then I get a coach. I am so far from elite. Like, if there was a spectrum and elite is like at one end, I am like the picture of the other end is me. But it's helping me so much. Like my knee was just in so much pain. He's just coached me through that. Now my knee's fine. And like, I would have just kept running harder and harder and harder, thinking like, maybe I can, you know, grow stronger. Like, the muscle will tear and it will grow because that's how gym bodies are built, because I don't know anything about fitness. And yet it's not expensive to have a coach, and it's turned everything around. 4 or 5 years off, that's a long time off. What got you back in?
I applied for the London Marathon, and as anyone knows, it's notoriously difficult to get into via the ballot. And I was like, okay, well, now I've got a place. I wasn't expecting it. I was like, now I need to start training. So that was the kind of entry back into it again.
And did someone bet you to go? Like, you, or did you just have that fire burning inside you, or was the event just so big that you've just dreamed of doing it? Like, what prompted you to enter into the ballot?
I couldn't tell you. I think maybe he was watching it probably the previous year and just missing it for not running for such a long time. It wasn't anyone in particular or an event that made me think I need to go back running. I think it was just definitely sort of probably seeing it on the BBC and thinking, oh, I want to do that again. Maybe I can better what I did before. Maybe I can learn from what I did before. So
nice. And so how did you find John? Was it John Starlett?
Yeah.
How did you find him? Like, yeah, how'd that work out?
Funny enough, actually, I found him on Strava, and taking a couple steps back when you talk about why getting a coach, I mean, before I started working with him, I didn't see myself as elite. I don't see myself as elite now. I was just thinking, I've tried so many things and it's not worked and I'm not getting any better. I'm just sort of staying at the same level. And I was thinking, why not try it? Because what's the worst that can happen? I'll spend the money doing it, but the time's going to pass anyways. And I'm not going to lose anything. So I might actually learn something. If I don't like it, give up type thing. So I thought, give it a go. And yeah, so we kind of connected on Strava initially and started coaching me through there. And yeah, we just kind of built it up. But the thing I'd say about coaching is that it has to be a long-term type thing. It's not like a training block where you think, oh, I'll just do 16 weeks and I'm going to run my PB or a year or something like that. It might even be 2 years, you know. So I think you just have to look at it like as a long-term type thing where you're just building little by little every time.
Mm. And you've just been like chipping away at your PB. I mean,
yeah,
you say like 4 hours-ish for the first one, and now you're down in the low threes, aren't you?
Yeah, so my slowest marathon time was 2010 when I did London, and that was 4:55. And my quickest one is, recently Manchester, where I did 3:05.
3:05. Whoa, yeah. Okay. So no worries. Just let's wipe nearly 2 hours off of your time. So that's cool. So do you feel like sub three, just you close?
Before Manchester, I believed sub three was possible. I had a really good training. I had a really good training block. I was just really unfortunate in the week before. I had an issue with my tooth. I chipped my tooth, and then I was on antibiotics because it was causing a lot of pain. And then the night before the actual marathon, I got food poisoning. So it was just like a double whammy. And I like to caveat by saying, like, obviously, if you're sick, don't run. But I basically, the night before, I just drank as much water as I could. The morning of the race, I felt okay. And I had a bagel and had some water and I kept it down. So I thought, well, I feel okay. I'm keeping my food down, so I'm going to run it. So I just want to caveat because some people, I've sort of put it out there on Instagram, and some people don't always see the full part of the picture. They think, oh, he was a stick and he decided to run, which is just irresponsible. But at the time I felt okay, but I knew that I was obviously going to be running. So if you're at 100%, I was going to be down to 70%. So that was challenging because I knew that I was running slower than I was capable of. But it's just one of those things really. So I still came up with a really good time. So I know it's definitely possible. If that's what happens on my worst day, then I think, well, what's going to happen on my good day? And I think that's the thing about running. You're always optimistic, even though you have your challenges. You're like, what if, what if, what if? And that's what I'm always working towards.
Mm. But it sounds like, you know, still there's still fun there. Do you know, like, you're still enjoying the running. You're also an advocate for like mental and physical health. I love that. I feel like you promote the healthy lifestyle that has to have some enjoyment involved in it and having your head in the right space. So tell us a bit about that.
It's quite a lot to that question really to sort of unpack. So when I first started running, I was running probably for the wrong reasons. When I say the wrong reasons, I was running for like external things. You get the medal to make yourself feel better. But I didn't really feel great within myself. I was just using all these things to kind of fill myself up. It's like having a bucket of holes in it, just pouring water into it. And, you know, it'd be full for a while and then empty. And I think towards the end of 2010, I ran Berlin. I didn't break sub four. And I was just devastated because I'd tried so many times before. And then I was like, right, that's it. I've had enough of running, etc. But also realised that I needed to kind of look at myself and try and sort myself out, because if you're running for the wrong reasons or your head's not in the right space, then running or anything is just going to suffer, because running is difficult as it is. So I needed to take some time out and, you know, done therapy. And, you know, even though you finish therapy, it's not like it ever finishes. It's like you don't do 30 press-ups and you're fit for life, you know. Your mental health is just as important. It's something that you need to kind of take care of and maintain on a day-to-day basis. So, I mean, moving forward now, I think mental health is such a wide thing. And something I'm probably coming to learn now, and it's still something I'm developing. But some of the issues that I had from growing up, people had different challenges. I was taking a lot of self-ownership for in terms of what happened to me growing up and things like that. And but then I took a step back and just through talking about it, and I realized actually it wasn't just me. I looked at the impacts on my parents, how they were brought up, how their parents were brought up, and you sort of see in the wider community how the same things affect other people, but people take ownership of these things as their own. And it's really hard to sort of sometimes untangle that. So I think when I could sort of start to separate kind of what was real, what's really me, what's this sort of influences, it's not easy. And it's not like a clear-cut thing, but I think it gives you a lot more context and a lot more understanding towards the people maybe before you. And even now, when I think about people who you might meet, someone who's, you know, has a real kind of back-off type attitude type thing. And the thing I think of now is, like, what have you gone through to make you like that? Because what you see first off, it might not actually be the real case. Do you know what I mean? People put up fronts because maybe they've been hurt so much that they need to... It's they feel that they seeing need to protect themselves, and they become so numb that they end up hurting other people that haven't who wouldn't hurt them. So I think it's I've given obviously waffled on a bit, but it's a long sort of process, and it's something that, you know, you work at every day, and everyone's got mental health. I mean, you there's so many ends of the spectrum. People think this is me or this is not me, but you know, you could have a divorce, you could have a bereavement, you could lose your job, you know, redefine of like your sense of self in terms of what do you do next type thing. So everyone has different challenges, and it's just, you know, no one's sort of immune from it.
Yeah, and I like that. I just got like the image of us all just like, we're all just in little rafts, we're all just out on the ocean just paddling away, and some people have different rafts, and we can upgrade, and sometimes our raft gets a little, you know, the air is leaking, or you know, it's taking on water. And you know, I'm thinking about like a car now, and you know, we service our car regularly, we service the car because we want to keep it in tune and whatever else. You know, we think about fitness and it's like, okay, well, you do some fitness and whatever else. But really, how much time, like if we all honestly sat down and said, okay, let's have a look at our calendar for the last month that we've just lived, how many times did I stop and focus on servicing my mind, doing things that recharged me? I had a chat with a lady yesterday, and I said, you know, she was having a bit of a stressful time, and I asked her, I said, well, look, you know, if you had to write down the 10 top things that for you spark joy and recharge you, and you wrote those 10 things down, and you looked back over the last 3 to 6 months, and you worked out how often you've done those things and how much time you've spent, what do you think it would be? And she said, well, none. And I'm like, well, we got to refill the jug. I love the idea of the holes in the jug. You can pour as much as you want into that jug. It might be better off just working on fixing the jug, not pouring more in.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's about like we feel like we always need to learn more. Sometimes it's about unlearning what we already know, and it's untangling that and just exploring it a little bit more. And it's an interesting point you said about how much time we spend. If you think what an active life is like, you know, we get up, we're in a responsive mode. I'm obviously generalizing, but you say you wake up, you pick up your phone, you're already in that responding mindset, you know. You haven't taken that time to kind of step back and be like, okay, what are my intentions for today? What am I looking to achieve? What am I grateful for? You know, and before you even start the day. And I think having those kind of procedures in terms of routines, date like morning, evening, is so important for your mental health. Because it makes you feel more grounded and more connected, I find. Otherwise, like I said, sorry.
No, that's interesting. So do you find that like that's some of the techniques that you've learned? Because like I love the attitude of gratitude, and sometimes like situations can be happening, and I don't know. Yeah. I feel like the push-up thing, like you said, you do push-ups, you're not fit for life. I have had this desire I've been drawn to positivity and like, you know, things like the Optimist's Creed, and you know, just basically learning all of these things that help kind of flex that positive gratitude muscle in my mind, that in all sorts of situations, and I am far from perfect, but in all sorts of situations I can look at something's happening and I'm like, oh, okay, that's that's not cool. But it could be like this, thank goodness. Or it, or like, well, yeah, but look at that learning. Thank God, I won't make that mistake again. And I'm quickly on to the next positive things, taking what I can and running with it. And you know what? Depending on how big it is, you know, I'm trying to belittle problems that are out there, but it that has built up over time. I wasn't like that when I was much younger. And so it's very intriguing to me about how we can sort of build it up. And I'm wondering your learnings, you know, that is it that attitude of gratitude? Is it starting with intention? Like, would there be a few tips that you've learned? Because, you know, you're being very vulnerable and very courageous, in my opinion, to share your story. So what were some of those key learnings, like about how to set your day?
I think sometimes when people do therapy, they think, all right, the answer is I do it. I get insight into what happened to me. This happened to me as a child. This happened to me growing up, whatever. Okay, now I'm set for life. I walk out that door and I'm kind of better. But then something else happens and it knocks you and it knocks you back. So I think it's just, like I said, it's something that you have to be mindful of every day. And when you talk about positivity or negativity, I just think of it as like both sides of the coin. They're both equally as important. The problem is there's a lot of people want to be searching for the positive, but running away from the negative, where sometimes like you actually have to stop and look at the negative and just be like, okay, what is it? What's happening there? You know, say something's happened in your life and it's just really challenging and you don't want to delve into it. The first thing you like, look, I don't want to talk about it. So that's like, imagine like an imaginary door, you open the door and it's just like a burning like inferno. You know, like, do you know what? This is too scary. I'm not going in there. Next time you open it, there's still a fire, but it's not as bad. And the third and the fourth time, the fire kind of lessens and you can actually stop it and look at it and be like, actually, it's painful, but it's not going to kill me. I will get through it. And it's the same like good and bad moments. So that's why I kind of think it's important to kind of embrace both sides, but be optimistic, you know, and you just need to be mindful. Like, I think it's always important just to be mindful. You're not always going to have a plan to be like, okay, I want to do this and I want to overcome everything. Some things might not have an answer, might not have a solution, but you know, you can face it. It might knock you down, but you will get up again. So I think for me, in terms of tips, I think gratitude is definitely an important one. I think the gratitude for remind yourself of your strengths, really, because sometimes we focus so much on our limitations. Oh, I can't do this today, or, you know, and then that sets a bad tone for the day. Just focus on what you're good at and what you're going to bring to the table, what you're going to bring to the party type thing. I mean, there's lots of different things. People might do meditation or, you know, whatever, but just find what works for you. Have a process which you can repeat and start the day off right, but then also be able to reflect at the end of the day what went well, what maybe you can learn from, what you like to do for tomorrow. And it sort of keeps you in that kind of that right mindset, because if you start the day with like a negative mindset, say like, oh, my boss is such a whatever and it's going to be a rubbish day, then you're going to be constantly looking for evidence to reconfirm that your boss is a such and such and you had a bad day. I'm not taking away that he or she might be a bad boss, but if you look for the negative, you'll find it. But if you try and look for the good, then you're going to be finding it throughout the day and be like, oh, okay, that's happened, and I can build with that. So it's just that you have to be mindful of like your intentions and your actions throughout the day.
I like that. I remember learning about the change curve once, and it was that really sort of blew my mind, because you know, things happen and we react. And I mean, like, you know, it's all theory and I don't know if it's real or not, but you know, there's the shock of it happening, then we're in denial, then we get angry, and then we're like trying to negotiate with our mind, maybe we get sad, and then, but what I remember seeing was that that was all kind of like the down spiral, but the bit to the positive spiral was acceptance. And then problem solving. So, you know, even in the scenario you're talking about there, it's like you could go through all that, like, I'm angry that this boss is mean, you know, I'm shocked, I can't believe this boss is mean, I'm angry now, you know, like, oh God, I'm sad, I'm down, I've got to go every day. But at the point where you're like, I accept that this person's attitude is the way it is, I accept that this is the workplace that I'm in, then the next step's problem solving. Is this the right workplace? You know, is there some sort of whistleblowing that you could do? Is there a way that you could compliment that person's attitude and turn them around? Could you just avoid them altogether? Could you get promoted past them? Like, you know, I don't, but it was always that acceptance piece that I wanted to try to get to as quick as I could, so that way I'm not dwelling on the stuff that maybe I can't change or being in that headspace. The sooner I get to acceptance, the sooner I can push on.
Yeah. And ultimately, like above that, you're taking responsibility for something you can control. Obviously, we can't control everything in life, but what you're clearly demonstrating there is that you're taking aspects for things that you can try and like work out the problem and go, actually, now I can do this within my power and do that. And that is such a big, that really, you can't underestimate how important that is to the human mind during the day and, you know, moving forward.
Mm. And so, like, it's interesting to me that you've, I mean, like, pre-10K, I don't know how fit you would have been, but, like, to this point in your life now, there must be, I mean, obviously, from a mental health perspective, from a physical perspective, like, what are some of the benefits that being an endurance athlete's brought into your life? Because, you know, it does sound like you're in a pretty great place, and it sounds to me like you really are inspiring people, you know, far and wide, me included. So what's that been like for you?
So it's a lot to unpack in that question, really. I think for me, that the stuff I talked about the problem solving, that's really helped me in my running. And I'll get into that a bit later. But essentially, I started off my Instagram because although obviously on Instagram it comes across like you're a certain type of person, I'd say I'm a confident introvert. I'm happy in my own space. And I thought, you know what, let's try and do something to break that. Let's try and sort of speak to people and just get out there type thing. But essentially, I like running. And running for me was something that was helping me process different feelings and just express myself. And I just really sort of built from that. And you never really start with like a blueprint of like, all right, this is what I'm going to do to get to here. It's kind of grown organically. And I just do it alongside like my regular life, family life, and my full-time job. So I'm grateful that people respond to it and feel like they can relate. And it's not something I kind of set out with intention to do, but it's brought me to, you know, like great opportunities like this and to speak to people like yourself and just do some really fun things.
Well, it is certainly interesting, and I love the idea that you know, you're making a conscious decision then to push yourself outside of your comfort zone, draw on your strengths, grow, and it's remarkable just how many stories there are that running is medicine. I know, like, it just seems to just help so many people, you know, feel better. You finish a run, unless you're injured, most times you finish a run, you're elated, you feel great, you're amazed that you did it. And so, you know, what a great message to share. And thinking of the elation that comes from running, like, from your perspective, I mean, you know, it may very well be, was it Manchester that you did 3:05? I don't know if you felt sick, feeling sick, that they probably may not have made it as awesome. But do you have a favorite endurance event memory?
I think it's hard to sort of talk about Manchester or Boston without talking about some of the earlier races, because when people look at my Instagram, they might just see like the highlights now or the shape I'm in now and think, ah, it's easy for that guy. Or, you know, he just like blazes through it. But they forget when, like, my first few marathons, like, it was just hard work. I was running, I was thinking, like, if the fitter I get, like, I'll be able to outrun the pain. And you can't outrun the pain of how painful it is, like, physically and mentally. And I just remember, like, there's a couple of races I'd get to, and I'd be tired and, you know, and your mind's just going, and I would just break, I'd fold, like a pastry type thing. I remember when I did Berlin in 2010, and the sub-4 pace passed me in like the late 20s, and that just absolutely broke me. I mean, physically I could have gone, but my mind was gone. I was just like, this is not what I wanted. And, you know, there was a couple of years of just like mourning type thing. And when you see like results, like say like Boston, it's kind of like, or Manchester, it's a kind of been built off the back of that, really, because there's been a lot of work that's gone into it. You know, it's gone from trying to look externally to find where my strengths are to being out to realize my strengths are internal. I mean, there's a video that I posted on my Instagram where when I got my 6-star finish and they, in Boston, they asked me a question about what does it mean to you? And I just started breaking down crying because I was remembered, like I remember feeling like this weak guy that couldn't run. And at that time I was running through like this terrible weather. And Boston 2018 had like absolutely terrible weather. It was like torrential rain throughout, you know, driving winds, and it was just absolutely freezing. I mean, you're shaking once you start and then when you finished. And I picked up a knee injury, which I was managing. And, you know, I got through all that and I still came in with a PB at the time, which had been superseded. But when I crossed the line, I realized actually I've been looking externally, but I should have really been looking internally because I had such a well of strength there that I didn't realize that I had, but it was built off all these previous results. And so when they asked me that, that's where it really hit me because I remember thinking back to the Berlin or to London when I did 4:55 and felt, this is awful. I can't do this type thing. And then even you fast forward to Manchester, I mean, even that was challenging. I like mentally, I was just like, I was just not going to give up. I was just not going to quit. But that's only been built just from the results and the training from that's been building up slowly and slowly over the years. It's not something that I wish I could say, like, I know was just like planted in me. And I used it straight away, but it was always there, but I just didn't know it was there. And the more I believed in myself, the more I was searching to see what that could look like, the more it revealed to me.
I feel like in a way, I just love the journey and I love the progress. And, you know, while you're talking, I'm thinking about the inferno, you know, you opened that door earlier on and I saw, whoa, shut the door back up. You know, like hoping that John Travolta, Ladder 49, someone will turn up and put that fire out. Right. Yeah. But then I'm, you know, it's this looking internally thing and, you know, being willing to perhaps open the door into your mind inside and then think about that there is an inferno. How do you somewhat redirect the flame towards something that you actually really love, you know, and perhaps maybe the flame is actually just raging on because it needs you to just connect to that inner fire, that inner light, that inner love, and perhaps, you know, running for you and finding a coach and going down that path. You know, I mean, I'll ask right now, you know, what you think makes up a successful mindset, because, you know, I'm keen to see how that somewhat connects to the fact that you have gone internal and that you have kind of like gotten that whole piece of the puzzle worked out to a point where it's now working for you.
Yeah, well, basically, good. I think that's a good question, and I want to answer it first by saying like, I'm not there yet. I'm not going to sit and say I've arrived because that's just arrogant. And, you know, that's what we're saying, like my best is behind me. I still believe that I'm learning and I still believe that I've got a lot more to give. And it's just all these little experiences are kind of helping me get there. So I guess what makes a, you know, strong sort of mindset would be, so for example, before Boston, I knew what was happening with the weather and I knew what was happening with my injury. And it kind of goes back to what you're talking about making plans. We're talking about the boss type thing. And before the race, I just basically went through every scenario in my head that I can imagine, from really good to like really awful. What would happen if my knee went at halfway? What would I do? And I was like, okay, well, I'll do this. What would happen if the weather was so bad I had to do this? What happened if my hands were, do you know what I mean? This like ridiculous thing, even like little details. What happened if something was rubbing in my shoe, like a stone in my shoe, and I had to run through whatever? What would you do? Some of those situations didn't happen, but it gave me the strength to know that if it did happen, I could problem solve on the fly. And that's the thing about marathons and life. I mean, everyone's, not everyone, but you know, people wish for like a perfect race. There is no perfect race. I'm then going to a marathon knowing that like it's going to be really tough. It's going to be good moments, but there's going to be a moment that's probably going to kick my ass. And I need to be able to respond back to it. So when I went to Manchester, for example, I started the race knowing that I was at, you know, not full fitness because of being so. I was like, well, I've got to redefine my race goals, my targets. So the target was, you know, run with a sub 3 pace to mile 20 and kick on. I got to mile 20, I was feeling okay, and then I started to feel like residual impacts of the food poisoning, and then the pace had just started to go. And I'm human, so you get those flashbacks between like Berlin 2010. You're like, oh, it's happening again. And it's like, at the moment you think, do I crumble? What do I do next? So I thought, you know, this is not Berlin. This is Manchester. You know, this is a different time. You've grown. You've put a lot of effort into it. And I just thought about all the things I'd given up, all the experiences that had made me up to that point. And I thought, do you know what? I can't do anything about him going. But what I can control is I can give my best effort right now and just put one foot in front of the other. And just be adaptable and just keep building and keep building. So, I mean, to answer your question, for me, it's been a big process, but I think being adaptable, being aware that, what, you know, there's good and bad, and neither, you know, they're both necessary, and you can sort of get through things. And if you get blown over or knocked over, you might not get up straight away, but I know I can get up. And then you think of all the things you've survived in your life or got through, and you think, you know, I'm still here.
Gosh, there's so much gold there. I'm loving, like, you know, fall down 7 times, get up 8. You know, like, it doesn't matter. If you just get back up, you can't beat the person that doesn't quit. So, you know, I really loved that. I really also love, you know, that it's been a journey for you. But thinking back to the race plan, and you'd planned out all of these different scenarios, that's such an intriguing thing. You know, it's like, because then when you're in the heat of battle, you know, the running battle, and you're exhausted and you're zonked and you whatever, instead of it cracking your mental space, all of a sudden you're like, no, I've seen this. I grab my shoe and I tip the rock out. Do you know, like, and it's a simple thing, but on the day you might be like, God, another thing. Whereas for you, you're like, well, I planned out 50 things and only 3 happened. What a great race, instead of not having done that planning. So it's almost like I'm finding that, like, you're able to prime your mind and get your mind set for the fact that there will be challenges, that you know, you're just never going to quit, that you've got this purpose and that you're pushing forward. It really just sounds like, and the humbleness to say, like, you're not the whole way there. I love the whole Dave Goggins thing. There is no finish line. There actually is no finish line. So just every single day you're just growing and pushing, and new challenges will arrive like a roller coaster ride. There'll be ups and downs. Let's just put our arms in the air and just and scream and enjoy the ride gleefully as best we can. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, I've been guilty of this as well before in previous races, that I think it's, you sometimes expect the race to be perfect, expect it to go a certain way. And as soon as I could let go of the fact that the race wouldn't be perfect and I couldn't control everything, but I could control how I reacted to it, that was like a big game changer, because even though it was really awful, I still had an answer. So, I mean, that's something that still I learn more from, even my training, I'm still learning from in my current races. So I think I just wanted to sort of put it out there, and I think, and that's helped me a lot, I think.
Yeah. And so with your coach right now, you guys are working on your PB. How is that going?
So at the minute I'm working on obviously the marathon PB, trying to get under 3 hours. And it's interesting. I mean, because one of the big lessons I learned from being coached to just trying to work out myself was that I go from training block to training block. So, and there's not really a lot of rest period during the year. Post races, and that's probably the main thing. But even like my birthdays and my holiday or Christmas, I mean, I'm still training. And the reason why I do that is because I really want to do it. I just want to see what my best looks like. But what does training look like? I mean, so post Manchester, I was hoping to have 2 weeks off, but I ended up having a week off because I speak to my coach and he's like, well, you didn't really push yourself as much as you could have done. I'm not, obviously paraphrasing. I don't want to make it seem like really horrible, but it's not. It's like, you didn't really push that much, so you could have a week off. I was like, okay, fair enough. But even though physically I was fine to go, I should have told him I felt good. That was probably my mistake. I should have just lied. He said, oh, my legs, I don't think I'll be able to make it. but So I was back after a week. But sometimes, you know, physically you'll feel great. I mean, I think mentally, because you've given so much, it still takes some time to process through. So my coach recognizes that and just gives me loads of easy runs. So you can run it what pace you want for a certain amount of time. And the training block I'm on now is that I'm still keeping the base miles up and I'm just doing shorter races. So it varies things up because marathon training is just really grueling. I mean, I was doing like 80 plus mile weeks, 80, 90 sort of mile weeks. And, you know, around family and work, it's just tough. When you're doing double runs, run before work, run after work, you know, your dog tired. It's just repeating. It's hard work. So now I'm in still keeping like a good sort of mileage up, so at least like 50 plus miles a week. But I'm just sort of just training now for the short distances, trying to get my speed up. I did a 10K recently, which I did about 38 minutes. I've got a 5K coming up and a half marathon coming up. So those are going to be some sort of tune-up races and just something to keep the interest, but just keep you focused as well as I head towards Berlin. So then once they're done, then I'll head back into the marathon training block. But because I've been consistently running, it's not a big jump, if that makes sense, because you're just still being consistent and just keeping those base miles up. But yeah, I mean, it's a long process. I mean, nothing's guaranteed in life. I mean, you could keep working and, you know, I'm not going to Berlin thinking I'm owed anything, but I'm just going to do the best I can with the time I have and just leave it all out there.
I like it. And you talked about the family thing. You mentioned before a full-time job, you're really like, you know, putting the effort into the training. You know, being a dad and like any tips for fitting all of this stuff in, because, you know, it sounds like you're doing a lot. And you're still here in a positive headspace and you're still kicking goals. You know, it can be a real struggle trying to fit everything in. So for parents out there, have you got any tips?
I think that let go of the illusion that there is something called balance, because it doesn't exist. You're just trying to spin loads of plates, and sometimes you can put a plate down, sometimes it just drops and you're spinning another one. It's hard work. I think before you're a parent, you can't imagine it, and people say to you, oh, I don't know how you're going to manage to do it. But then even when you become a parent, people are like, I can't believe you still train that much. How do you manage to do it? But it's funny, as things happen, as humans are readaptable, we forget that things happen and we can adapt to what we need to do. So it's not easy, for sure. I mean, going to work and then, you know, training before work, going to work, come back, trying to do the family stuff, especially on the weekends, because say if you're doing long runs, you know, it's just, if you say you've done like a 20 mile run, I mean, no one feels pressure after 20 miles. And then you've got to come back and then you've got to run after your daughter, who's got loads of energy, wants to like do laps in the house. It's like, all I want to do is just do nothing. I just want to go to sleep, but it doesn't happen. Or, you know, your kid gets ill and, you know, you're up in the night and you're dog tired from the previous workout, and you've got another workout tomorrow. I mean, that happened to me this Sunday. My daughter wasn't feeling real well. Same for my wife as well. She wasn't well, so we were both up. And then you start the next day going to the run. And I was just like, do you know what? I don't really want to do this run. I really don't want to do this run. I'm tired. I do not want to do it. But, you know, it's kind of like that autopilot thing. You kind of go back to what your why is and why you're doing it, and you get it done. Is the run enjoyable? No. Is it? It's one of those things, but it's hard to sort of explain that on Instagram. You know, it'd be great to, you know, get your 7 hours plus sleep and then, you know, feel refreshed. But, you know, in the real world, you know, we're not like pro athletes where, you know, you run in the morning, come back, have a massage, have, you know, something to eat, drink, stay hydrated, have a nap, you know, get up, relax, you know, get up, run, back, change, at work, at a desk. I've got to be mindful not to sit at my desk too long, so you don't stiffen up. And you say if you've done like a track workout, for example, that's really challenging, because then I'm so stiff and like I'm walking like like
Tin Man,
like the Deads, yeah, like Tin Man. And it's like people are like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, I'm just training for a marathon. It's all worth it. So when people say there's balance, like there is no balance, there's always like a trade-off to sort of achieving anything. So I try my best, but if it wasn't for support of my wife as well, it'd be quite difficult. But also in the pursuit of running, is something I've become aware of. It's a selfish thing, but you also have to be mindful of other people, and that's something I'm still always trying to be mindful of. So even if I feel tired or whatever, I'm just like, look, it's still half my life. My daughter still wants to spend time with me, and you know, it's a privilege. Do you know what I mean? And I can't just be like, I've got to do my run. So it's a challenging thing, and you're always trying to do everything as right as you can, but no one's perfect, and I'm not perfect by any stretch of the imagination.
I love that. I mean, you know, it makes me get a tear in my eye every time I listen to it, but that Cats in the Cradle song, I don't know if you've heard familiar. That song. Oh gosh, anyway, it's this dad, and he talks about how like he you know, his son keeps asking him to hang out with him, and you know, like, can we play? And he's like, oh, not today, I'm too busy, son, you know. And anyway, it keeps going over time, and the son's growing, and every time the dad asks the dad, can you play with me, dad? And he's like, oh, sorry, not today, I don't have time. And the kid's always like, well, I'm going to be like you, dad, I know I'm going to be just like you. And so then eventually, like, the dad gets to a point where he's finally got time, and he says, hey son, do you want to hang out? And then the son's like, oh, sorry, dad, it'd be great, but maybe another time. And it goes to say, look, you know, that his boy had grown up just like him. And so I don't know, somehow that song just plays in the back of my mind when my kids ask me to play with them. And like, I want to anyway, but you know, if I'm in one of those really like, I'm tired, I'm wrecked, I've gone and done a big event, and then the kids will be like, can we come and do this? I was like, yes, I'm just going to go and do it. And then I'll be in playing with them. I'll be sore. I'll be whatever. But I'm hoping that they'll never look back and think, wow, I didn't spend the time. And it is about just suffering, because really the idea of me playing with the kids is completely at the other end of suffering. But, you know, not getting the sleep, not getting the recovery, and getting the joy and knowing that I'm being there for them. That's kind of like what you're saying. The balance isn't there. I probably do need to sleep and probably do need to go and get that massage or have the nap or whatever. But yeah, it's an interesting take on it. I like where your head's at. You should listen to the song too. Just honestly, if you want to get a little tear in the eye, it's just a bit dusty in here. So speaking of your you know, recovery, and you know, you have a week off after an event and you haven't got these big times between blocks, do you have any sort of tips like for how to recover?
So I think the first thing is post run is hydrate. That's a big thing, because you end up getting so dehydrated, it has a big impact the rest of the day. And obviously food, you know, trying to eat within the first half an hour, get some protein. You know, you can do stretching as well, and that will help. I mean, sleep would be the biggest thing. That's the crucial thing, but it's not always possible. And you know, I'm always sitting and say that I get my 7 hours, because sometimes it's just broken sleep. But I think, yeah, it's making sure you get the sleep, the food and the hydration right. It's so key. But also it's just the way you train as well. Like, if you're hammering it too much, then you're not helping your recovery. So I mean, a big peeve of mine is that, like, you might go in Strava, for example, and you'll see someone who say is run a marathon X time, and then their easy runs are, you know, like 10 or 20 seconds slower than around about the same time as their marathon time. You're like, that's not an easy run. Running easy in your easy days, you know, really does help for recovery and just building your strength, really. So
I like it. And so any like your big goals for 2019, what's coming up for you?
I think juggling it around family is obviously is the main thing. So family time is obviously the most important thing. But personally, I mean, running, I'm just, because of family, I think I'm just trying to keep it local at the minute. Some of my races, obviously Bar Berlin, But the main goal really is just to improve in the marathon and just sort of see what my best looks like. I feel I've been a bit of a late bloomer for this, so I feel I'm just concentrating on the marathon. So I've got, hopefully do two next year, one in beginning of the year, one towards the end of the year, and just working to get my time down. Because you want to look back and say, like, I gave it my best shot, but then I know probably at some point I'm going to have to probably scale it back down and, you know, concentrate on family and just because that's more important, and just still keep fit, but return to it another time. But I think this is my moment now where I feel like if I just stick with it and build on the process the progress I've made, you know, it could be quite exciting to see what the results are. For 2019 and 2020.
I'll be cheering from the sideline. I hope that that you get there. And it's interesting to see, like, you know, where these peaks could be and what the future may hold. Like, you see people that, you know, then all of a sudden they might go into ultra, and then it could be the distance, or it could be, you know, something else. So it sounds like some exciting times ahead for you.
I think it's so easy sometimes with so many races, you could just jump and do too many. And I think that's something I learned previously. You literally have to have your A races, because I could race every weekend, but you're just going to get broken. Some people it works for, but for me, my body just doesn't work for. So I have to pick my races. So I think that's what works for me. And I think that's what, I'm going to be doing for this year, next year.
No, that's totally cool. And so it's interesting you mentioned that, like, you know, the A races and that's the strategy. And again, there's all strategies for all different people, different, you know, horses, different courses. But from your perspective, would you have, say, three tips that you would, you know, say to people that are perhaps looking to get into endurance activities? You know, what would your three tips to them be?
The first thing I'd say is don't compare. And that's a big bugbear of mine. So, for example, I don't know, it's probably my fault as well. I posted my monthly miles recently, and you get a lot of feedback going, you're running a lot, you're not taking any days off. But people look at it like as a whole, but without actually knowing, because I've not given them the details. So it might look like I'm just hammering it every day, but you don't realize actually I'm, you know, taking it easy for, you know, 5 out of 7 days or whatever. And when I say taking it easy, I mean I run by how I feel. If I feel like I'm gonna slow down to like a real shuffle or walk, then I'll do that. If you know, so don't compare your journey against someone else's, because it just robs you of your time and your growth, because you'll never see where you can go. Because if you don't know your own strengths, then you know you can't see the strengths in other people. So I think, first of all, like, don't compare. Secondly, enjoy it. Find what your why is and just focus on that. And know that as your running progresses, that your goals may change. So, like, now I'm in a stage where I think, okay, I can be fast. But I know at some point that's not going to happen. I'm going to slow down and I'm going to have to revise my goals. And, you know, so for me, running, even though it seems to be about times now, it is generally about, you know, maintaining a good way of life and being healthy, and just because I actually enjoy it and I love doing it. But that will change as I get older. So know what your whys are and just keep enjoying it. If you don't enjoy it, you won't get up in the winter nights. I mean, and get up. I mean, like, the winter mornings when I'm training, it's just, you know, it's dark, it's cold. You know, you don't want to be there sometimes, but then you go back to, why am I doing it? And then when you're in the race and you've crossed the line and you sort of, it reveals a strength that you didn't realize you had, you can't buy that. You can't put a price on it. If the medal went the day afterwards, you still have that feeling that no one could take away from you. And the final thing I'd say is just stay consistent and be optimistic. The biggest lesson I learned, especially from my early days, was that I was doing it wrong in terms of I was wanting too much too quickly, too soon. And sometimes these things just take time. You just have to keep building blocks like day by day. So like, you've got like, Will Smith has said this. I'm not going to claim what I'm making it up. But he was talking about this instance where his dad would make him build a wall. And it was just like starting brick by brick. And then eventually after a year or 2 years, yeah, like, it's a massive wall. But you can't always see it at the beginning. And it's just believing it. Like, but when I started working with my coach, it was just like, I wanted to believe that I could be a faster runner, but I had no evidence to prove that I was, because my times were a lot slower. I'm still on the journey now, but I'm only seeing the benefits because I had training cycles and training cycles where it didn't seem like it's happening, And then you get a breakthrough, and then you're back down again, and then you're a breakthrough, and then it comes back down again. So stay consistent and don't think you can just like pull up trees after like, you know, one training block. It just takes time. I mean, I don't think I'm like particularly talented at it, at running. I mean, at school, I'd probably be better at say, short distances. So running long distance, you know, has been a real struggle for me. So if I can do it and I don't think I'm talented, then I think, you know, it's possible for many other people.
I like it. Okay, some inspirational tips, some absolute nuggets of wisdom littered all throughout this catch up, Marcus. I have loved getting to know you and getting a window into what you're about. And so for people that would be listening to this and want to follow along on your journey, is there some websites or social media handles that you'd like to share?
Yeah, so my main tool on social media is my Instagram. And you can find me under The Marathon Marcus, all one word. Or you can find me on my website, which is marathonmarcus.com.
Awesome. So, mate, again, like, this has been, you know, absolute gold. I'm looking forward to listening to it again, just so I can absorb, you know, all of this awesomeness that is the Marcus Brown. But thank you so much, man, for taking the time to have a chat.
Thank you. And also, but bear in mind, I don't call myself the Marcus Brown or the Marathon Marcus. But I'm talking to people normally, because that would just be weird doing this. I don't talk about myself in the third person. It's only on Instagram.
Oh, mate. But no, I really have enjoyed the time, buddy. Thanks so much.
Good stuff. Thank you, Tom.